Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name's James Henderson. I'm chairman of the gas programme at OIES. And with me today, I'm delighted to have Mike Fullwood and Jack Sharples, our usual contributors to the discussion on the impact of the Russia-Ukraine war on energy markets. And also with me, I have Anouk Honoré, who's here to talk about the impact on Europe specifically following the publication of her recent Energy Insight, Demand Response to High Gas Prices in Europe in 2021 and early 2022. So Anouk will be talking to me a bit later. But Jack, I'm going to come to you first. And rather than asking this question at the end, as I usually do, I'm going to start with storage. So perhaps you could give us your regular update on storage injections and the levels of storage in Europe.
We're doing okay. I'll continue, at least in terms of recent injections, continue my cautious optimism from previous podcasts. We have just over 54 BCM in storage now, so we're well past the 50% of capacity being used point. Between the 1st of April and the 13th of June, we had a record 27 BCM injected into European storage, beating the previous records of around 22 to 23 BCM that we saw in the same period in 2018, 19 and 20. So that leaves us with stocks about 10 BCM higher year on year. And in order to reach our target of around 80 BCM of storage stocks by the 1st of November, we do need another 26 BCM of injections, which coincidentally is the same amount that was injected into European storage between the 13th of June and the 1st of September last year. So we seem to be well on track, let's say, but that is very heavily caveated around flows from other sources and continued European supply.
Yes, I have to say that the day you're not cautiously optimistic about storage is the day the European gas market has to panic, I think, after your comments so far on the podcast. But let's talk about those other flows, and let's start with Gazprom. Obviously, there was some news about Nord Stream this week, and I should mention that we're recording this podcast on the 15th of June, and on the 14th of June, there was some news about Nord Stream. Why don't you tell us about that?
Gazprom put out a press release explaining that in the course of some general maintenance, it had not received back some parts from Siemens relating to some of its compressor stations, and so had to reduce the flow of gas via Nord Stream accordingly. Now, we saw this in the physical flows, which dropped from Nord Stream being at pretty well full capacity on the 1st of June. It had fallen by about 10 or 15 million cubic meters per day in the course of the first half of June, which we attribute to some of these compressor station repairs. But then yesterday it dropped sharply to 113 million cubic meters per day. So that's quite a substantial drop. Now, the key question for us is that when Gazprom put out its press release explaining this, and by the way, Siemens has not put out a corresponding press release giving its side of the story, but the Gazprom press release gives no indication as to how long this issue may last. Now, given that Nord Stream is due to go down for its annual maintenance from the 11th to the 21st of July, there's every possibility that this issue could run into that, and that Nord Stream flows could remain somewhat curbed between now and then drop to zero for the maintenance period. So obviously that has knock-on implications for European supply, and particularly European storage injections. Now, to put those numbers into context, in the first half of June, the average daily flow of pipeline gas from Russia to Europe was about 216 million cubic meters per day. So this drop of about 55 million cubic meters per day is quite substantial.
Okay, that sounds a little worrying then. What about the other lines? The last time we spoke, there was a problem in Ukraine as well. How are flows going through Ukraine? And I guess Yamal is still at zero, is it?
Yes, so Yamal is still at zero. And the flows via Ukraine also remain, if we want to call them, curbed or capped. Just for the reminder of our listeners, Russian gas enters Ukraine via two interconnection points, the larger one at Sudzha and the smaller one at Sokhranovka, or Sokhranivka, to give it its Ukrainian pronunciation. And it's the flows at Sokhranivka that have been halted The Ukrainian TSO, GTSOU, said that it had lost control of the nearby compressor station and the gas metering point. And then for its part, Gazprom simply turned off the valve at that cross-border point. So the flows via Ukraine remain very much below the transit contract that Gazprom has for the supply of gas to Europe via Ukraine.
I guess one of the major issues that was out there was this question of ruble payments. Obviously, we've seen some countries cut off already for not paying in rubles. Do we think we're through that now? I mean, the flows are no longer under threat, if you like, from the from countries not paying in rubles.
I think it seems that way. The decree by the Russian government stipulated that all gas that had been supplied from the 1st of April onwards would be subject to this new ruble payment mechanism. So given that we are well beyond that now, I think we're in a situation where everybody that had invoices to be paid has either refused to pay in rubles. So as we've seen with Gazprom, Gazprom's contract with Shell to the Netherlands, GasTerra to the Netherlands, Bulgargas to Bulgaria, and then, of course, the largest of the contracts, PGNiG, to Poland. So they have refused to pay using the ruble payment mechanism, but it seems that everybody else now has.
Okay, that has stabilised. What about the non-Gazprom flows to Europe? Any highlights you want to pick out there from either positive or negative?
Well, the Norwegian pipeline flows to the European Union via the Z-Pipe, Fram-Pipe, Nor-Pipe and Euro-Pipe 1 and 2, taking Norwegian gas down to France, Belgium, the Netherlands and Germany, all remain at pretty close to full capacity. Norwegian flows to the UK via the Langeled pipeline have come down in recent weeks, but that seems to be rather more in relation to UK very seasonal gas demand dropping off. And also, as I'm sure Mike will touch upon, the differentials between the NBP and TTF prices that we're seeing as a result of the UK market, thanks to some bottlenecks being effectively much better supplied than the rest of Northwest Europe. One other point to mention regarding Norway, it seems that we have, touch wood, narrowly averted a strike by oil and gas industry workers there. Three of the large unions involved in those negotiations reached an agreement in principle on a new pricing contract. But two of those three unions have actually sent the agreement in principle out to a ballot of its members. And the results of that are not due back until the 30th of June. So at the moment, there's an agreement in principle. It seems like we've averted a strike, but 30th of June is the date to watch out for. It is notable that those unions put out a press release saying that they would endeavour to ensure that even in the event of a strike, Norwegian gas production and exports continued as close as possible to their full capacity given the supply situation in Europe.
Okay, so definitely something to look out for then. 30th of June. Okay, put that in the diary. Mike, let me come to you. The UK has been mentioned by Jack, and obviously that's one of the major sources of LNG imports. What's happening with LNG supply generally to Europe and then more specifically to the UK at the moment?
Yes, thank you, Jim. It's really just a continuation of what's been happening for most of this year. I'll come on to what has happened to the LNG supply yesterday with the Freeport announcement, but LNG supply has continued to be really strong, sort of a continuous rise into Europe. I mean, Europe, the wider Europe, including UK and Turkey, is up first 5 months of the year, about 24 billion cubic metres year on year. And it looks as though that sort of increased rate is continuing into June. And the UK has been taking quite a substantial portion of that increase. And as we've said in the past podcast, is re-exporting it to continental Europe by the interconnection BBL. Although there have been some constraints on the amount of exports can go down those lines because of issues of Bacton with liquids ingressing into the line, as they call it. So it's really a continuation of what's been happening for the first few months of the year, carrying on into June.
So we're still seeing the price differentials, are we? UK, so NBP, TTF, and even LNG to TTF?
Yes, we are. I mean, prior to yesterday, then the NBP price was sort of about a 25-30% discount to TTF, and the LNG Northwest Europe delivered ex ship price was sort of in between the two. So the LNG price was sort of fairly similar to sort of the JKM level prices, reflecting the Asian market. So we're still seeing those differentials because of the inability of the UK to send any more gas down the interconnectors to continental Europe. So, as Jack's alluded to in context of Norwegian supply to the UK, it's down a bit because the demand on the system isn't there.
And just for our listeners, give us the exact prices at the moment. I mean, not to the nearest cent, but I mean, you know, what are we talking about in terms of TTF and JKM?
Yeah, well, I've just got the TTF graph up for this morning. I mean, if we go back to the 6th, 7th, 8th of June, before the Freeport explosion, then TTF prices are around about €80 a megawatt hour. The current quote is €100 a megawatt hour, and that's jumped dramatically in the last day or two. I'm not sure how much it's reacting to the reduced gas pump flows on Nord Stream. It does seem to be reacting to the Freeport fire. Initially, I think on the Freeport fire, it was said that it may be out for 3 weeks. But there was a full report yesterday from the operators saying it won't get back up to full output capacity until much towards the end of the year. It may get back on in 90 days at slow rates, but. So they've obviously got to go through all the procedures to get approval to start up again. So that's had a significant impact on the price, and that's a lot of supply. It's a big plant, 15 million tonnes per annum plant. So it's a big plant being taken off the market for a substantial period of time.
Okay, so we're starting to see some of the outages you kind of mentioned in previous podcasts. I mean, last year obviously saw a lot of outages. It's almost inevitable we'll see some forms of outages, and this is one example, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a particularly egregious outage in terms of fire. I mean, obviously, you know, Hammerfest had a fire back in sort of late 2020, and that's been offline really until last week when the tankers turned up and started loading again. But Freeport's a much bigger facility than Hammerfest. So, yes, we're already expecting sort of a few little minor technical issues, but this has taken quite a lot of LNG off the market. I mean, prior to this, we were... with the constraints of winding, we would think there may be about a 7.5% increase in available supply this year compared to last. Yeah, we're now down to maybe a 5% increase. So the loss of Freeport is pretty much offsetting the increase in supply coming from the Venture Global's Calcasieu Pass, and that's ramped up fairly quickly. But Freeport has basically taken away that expected increase in supply.
Okay, well, let's talk about another issue we touched on before, which is where that LNG goes to apart from Europe, which is obviously Asia. What's the situation with demand in Asia, and is there much pull for LNG, particularly, I guess, China, where demand has been weaker than expected?
Yeah, before it comes to China, I mean, the bright spot, if that's what you want to call it, in terms of rising demand in Asia, is coming from the Southeast Asian countries. That's Indonesia, although most of the Indonesian LNG is from itself to itself in terms of the plants in the eastern side to the consumers in the western side. Malaysia's up, Singapore's up. One of the big increases come from Thailand. It's not necessarily looks as though demand for gas in Thailand is particularly higher, other than sort of a normal recovery, but it's the issues they're having with Heartland imports from Myanmar. So LNG imports to Thailand are up significantly this year. The Asian countries is the one area of Asia where demand has been rising. If we come to India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, I think Pakistan's been really struggling to get LNG cargoes, even those notionally contracted to it. They've been pulled away by one of the suppliers to other markets. And the price impact there is causing demand to come off a little bit. Japan, Korea, Taiwan's down a little bit. Sort of normal circumstances there. But you're right, China is the really big, unexpected curtailment of demand. It's down 8.6 BCM year on year. Yeah, normally we'd expect China to be up, you know, maybe 7, 8 BCM this year. At the moment it's down 8.6 BCM. So there needs to be some recovery in the second half of the year to even get back to sort of a unchanged level of demand in China. And that is highly uncertain given that increasing COVID in Beijing again. But there's an expectation of a stimulus package to boost the economy in the second half of the year. But it could well be that almost unheard of in Chinese LNG history. We actually have lower LNG imports into China this year than last year. It's got a lot of uphill running to do just to stand still for the whole year.
Okay, so that's essentially helping out the global gas market in a sort of unexpected way. Anouk, I would like to come to you. Now we're on demand, if I may. Obviously, you published your paper a week or so ago now on the demand response to high prices in Europe in 21. I think we should probably focus on 22 and 23. Clearly, the Repower EU kind of strategy had quite a lot in it about kind of holding back demand, constraining demand. What's been happening so far in 2022 with demand in Europe?
In 2022, and I will be speaking for mostly the first 4 months, the good data on demand is not as readily available as for supply. But on the first 4 months in 2022, in a wide European region that would include the UK and Turkey, we've seen a decline of about 10% compared to the same period in 2021. So that's about 23 BCM less in January, April in 2022 than what we had in 2021. Looking at just the EU 27, we had a decline of about 11% or just about 19 BCM. So quite a huge drop in demand in the first 4 months of this year.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, and how much of that was weather related and how much was actually that a genuine demand response?
Well, that's a good question. Exactly how to disentangle the factors and explaining the demand is not that easy. But certainly, a mild winter, so warmer temperatures compared to what we had in 2021, contributed to lower gas demand in the first 4 months of this year. But we've also seen some demand response. It seems to be happening in all of the three main sectors of consumption. So in heating, with some apparently change in consumers' behavior, so turning down their thermostat. In the industrial sector, it's happening quite a lot, and we're seeing a huge decline in gas demand in the industry. Apparently, we seem to be seeing some switching to other fuels. I can explain that later if you want. And in electricity generation as well, we've seen some gas to coal switching, especially in Q1 and in April. For instance, gas generation is down by about 5%, while coal generation is up by almost 9%, again, compared to 2021. In May, we've seen lower gas prices, while coal and CO2 prices remain fairly high. And apparently, there could have been some lifted of gas generation margin and therefore gas generation use as well. The availability of the coal plants was also slightly lower in May.
Okay, well, and that's quite a good segue into talking about what the most important bit, which is, I guess, is the rest of 22 and into 2023. You've touched on the power sector, let's stay there. What is expected to be the major driver of fuel demand in the power sector over the next few months?
So let's start with coal. So in the coming month, I think we're going to see some coal to gas switching this time as a result of high coal prices and ETS prices, and also, of course, the ban on Russian coal that will start in August this year. Just to bear in mind, about 46% of the coal imported in the EU 27 came from Russia in 2020. That's about 45% for Germany, 70% for Poland. These two are the two largest users of coal in electricity generation in Europe. So that would potentially create some tensions in their energy system in the second half of the year. Now, having said that, at the EU level, it seems that the buyers have already started to take less Russian coal, and the share seems to be down to maybe around 30-35% of imports in the first 5 months of the year. But it's still quite a huge chunk that will need to be replaced in the coming months. Now, for this winter, there are plans by various European governments to boost their coal capacity in their mix in case of a shortage of gas. And therefore, in the winter, we're likely to see and go back to gas to coal switching, so we could redirect some gas volumes to the other sectors that have less options to switch to other fuels. So that was for coal. Bear in mind that hydro is also down by about 15% at the beginning of this year. We had a limited availability of hydro. It's expected to continue in the next few months. We've seen in the past that it had quite an important impact on gas demand, especially in the southern countries. We have nuclear that's also down. That's probably one of the major issue in the next few months. We've all know the revisions by EDF, the French state controlled utility, of their expected output, the French nuclear output for 2022, that has been revised downward several times this year already. So all these factors, coal, hydro, and nuclear, will have an impact on the use of gas-fired power plants. And in the coming months, they all drive towards an increase in the coal of gas-fired power plants. And that will be especially evident during low wind availability days.
Okay. I mean, you talked about the winter impact already. And if we move slightly on to the impact in the heating sector. I mean, a cold winter would boost demand. But I mean, what kind of orders of magnitude are we talking about in that sort of circumstance?
So usually the influence of temperature on gas use can easily represent about 20, maybe even more, BCM more compared to a year with a mild winter. So if we do get some cold weather in November, December, it will indeed tighten the market quite dramatically, especially if it happens at time of low alternative options for the power generation sector. This is exactly what we've seen in Q4 2021, for instance, where we had very low nuclear and very low hydro. Now, the space heating in buildings, it's a demand that is very responsive to fluctuations of temperature, but not so much in terms of price elasticity, which is relatively inexistent or very limited, just because the consumers do not necessarily have access to alternative options for heating, but also the degree to which the end users would actually react to high gas prices depend on how these prices are passed down to the consumers, if you want. And of course, all the measures that have been taken over the past few months to shield the consumers from high gas prices, which are necessary in times like what we're seeing at the moment, could potentially impact exactly how much demand response, which is already limited, how much demand response we would have from this sector. And bear in mind that consumer behavior will be the key this winter. And this is what the EU and many member countries are counting on to make things work during the winter months.
Okay. I mean, I guess the other major consumer, obviously, is the industrial sector, which you've mentioned already. And there's been concerns, of course, about the impact on industry of high prices and even supply cutoffs in terms of reductions or even destruction of demand. What do you see for the rest of this year and into 23 in the industrial sector? Are we seeing reduced use of gas?
Yes. The short answer is yes. In 2022, as I mentioned, there's already very clear signs that high gas prices have impacted demand for gas in the industrial sector. We've seen some demand reduction. I think we potentially have seen some demand destruction as well, which means demand that will not come back in the next few months and years. Now, interestingly, the manufacturing output appear to be similar or above the level that we've been seeing in 2021 in various markets, while gas demand is showing sharp declines in these countries, suggesting to me that we are, in addition to some reduction, we're also seeing some switching from gas to other fuels that seem to have been happening at the beginning of this year. Now, for the rest of the year, this is expected to continue if gas prices remain high. But also what happens in terms of governmental support will be tremendously important and drivers for what happens to gas demand in the industry. We've seen some support happening already, especially since February. But exactly the measure to which it will continue to happen will really impact the further decline in industrial demand, or will just stop the decline in industrial demand.
Okay. And as one looks a bit further forward, I mean, I guess there's the question of meeting the REPowerEU targets and whether that's going to happen from high prices impacting demand generally, or whether you think governments are going to have to actually step in and kind of forcibly reduce demand. What do you think about the kind of the strategy going forward in terms of, demand constraint? Do you think it's going to be high prices, or do you think it's going to be something else that constrains demand?
It's probably going to be both. Interestingly, we had a speech to the European Parliament by the EU Energy Commissioner yesterday, so June 14th. And she mentioned she was focused on providing a guidance to member states on potential gas demand reductions as part of the preparation for the winter to come. And she also urged the member states to sign solidarity agreements in preparation for winter. Now, I think we need to consider two scenarios in this case. First, the reduction of demand is a choice. Or second, the reduction of demand is an obligation just because the supply is not there. If we do get the reduction of demand because it's a choice, it will mostly happen in a high price environment. And therefore, the high prices will be the main driver to lower the demand for the rest of 2022. In other words, the target mentioned in the REPowerEU could be met, but not because of the drivers envisaged in the REPowerEU. That was the one that was published in March this year, which was focusing on renewables and energy savings. But the consumer behavior that I mentioned earlier is expected to play a very important role, especially next winter. This has been mentioned by the EU. It's mentioned by the IEA. It has been mentioned by various national TSOs and governments that are all counting on it, on the change of consumer behavior in their plans for the coming winter. And again, this will be a potentially tricky balancing act between shielding the consumers from the energy crisis and also expecting an active lower demand on their part. Other measures need also to be considered, for instance, accept more coal in the generation mix in the coming months. And we've seen active steps being taken in various countries. For instance, in Germany, we've seen or we're expecting a return of about 10 gigawatts of lignite, hard coal, and even oil fired reserve units that will be put back into the market up until 2024. Now, the other option is that if we have an obligation to reduce demand just because we don't have the supply, then first, of course, we find alternative supply, import, storage, or we switch to other fuels in the generation or in the industry. And then we're down to having to have mandatory cuts or curtailments, which will start in the industrial sector, especially during the winter. And this is actively discussed in various countries. Probably we will have some mandatory switch in the power sector, essentially to coal, because the other options will already have been used. Now, this is where you can do it in about 10 countries in Europe. You can't switch to coal because coal is not part of the mix anymore. And having done all that, of course, to be sure to protect the small consumers during the winter months, while at the same time, again, encouraging them for energy savings and behavioral change.
Okay, interesting thoughts. I mean, I guess we're in a slightly uncharted territory here, so we'll have to kind of wait and see what happens next. But Mike, let me come back to you as we come to the end of the podcast. I mean, if I look at the things we've talked about today, you know, from the kind of relative positivity of storage being filled at record levels to, you know, China demand being down, there do appear to be a number of other factors that are starting to cause concern as we, you know, head into summer and then towards winter. Where do you think we are on balance in the global gas market, particularly with relevance to Europe?
Yeah, I think, as I've said before in these podcasts, we've been sort of standing on the edge of a precipice now for 3 or 4 months. I think we've now got over the precipice and we're hanging on with the fingertips of both hands, basically. So and I guess things could get worse from that. I think one of the key drivers for that is the Freeport explosion. That takes a lot of LNG off the market. I mean, you know, the IEA and the EU have talked about you turn your thermostat down 1°C, you save 10 BCM. That's half of Freeport's annual throughput. So the supply shock is way, way greater than anything that can be done by just turning your thermostat down. So, and I think the key thing to look for in the absence of a mild or cold winter, which we can't control, is how much China rebounds back. Asia demand will continue to remain high in the Southeast Asia countries. I mean, Latin America will be down a bit because of the there's more rain in Brazil. But will China rebound back to even sort of be year-on-year flat, which would require a big rebound back, or will it remain very weak, giving a reduction in China's LNG imports this year? That would release a lot of LNG to come to Europe and could save Europe coming into the winter. If China rebounds back, and there's even a sort of normal winter or slightly cold winter, then things will get very, very tricky. And Anouk talked about sort of solidarity between EU countries. I'm a bit sort of very sceptical about that, to be honest, because, I mean, I think the EU countries are really in trouble, those which rely heavily on Russian pipeline gas. So Spain, Portugal and France cannot help out Germany, Italy and the Central European countries. They're sort of on their own, basically. And however much the French say, well, we're solidarity with the Germans, it's not going to help. There's not the sufficient infrastructure to move gas from west to east on the system. So pretty much Central Europe and Germany, they're on their own, basically, in the event of a lower Russian flows and a very cold winter.
Okay, well, thank you. We started with some positivity from Jack, and we seem to have ended on a rather more depressing note. But hopefully in future podcasts, we can analyse that in a bit more detail, and obviously keep an eye out both on the supply side and on the demand side. Thank you very much indeed to all of you for your contributions. Thanks to Mike, thanks to Jack, thanks to Anouk. Please do look out for Anouk's paper, which is available now on our website. But with that, thank you very much indeed for listening. Please stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org. Thank you.